Well, thank you very much for that introduction, James, and thank you also for hosting today's event, and thanks to the Wall Street Journal. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you all today about some of the key cyclical and structural forces affecting the Australian labour market over recent years. And it's not so surprising that we spend considerable time and effort at the bank trying to understand labour market developments, given their relevance to both unemployment and inflation. Over recent months, labour market conditions have shown some signs of improvement. That follows only very modest growth last year. Employment's grown by so far this year by by almost 0.9%. The unemployment rate's ticked down a few months ago, and the participation rate appears to have stabilised somewhat after falling after a significant decline through 2013. These improvements appear consistent with some signs of better growth in economic activity, although I'm going to come back to that in just a couple of minutes. So despite these improvements, though, there's still a fair degree of spare capacity in the labour market. This is apparent across a number of different dimensions. First, the unemployment rate is high relative to its recent history. The participation rate is around the lowest it's been over about the past 8 years or so. There's been a significant decline in the ratio of employment to the working age population since about 2010. And wage growth has declined to be well below its average of the past decade. So my plan today is to discuss some of the key forces at play that have led the labour market to this point and think about some of the prospects for the future. Now, like all markets, developments in the labour market reflect the interplay of both demand and supply. These determine outcomes in terms of quantities, such as employment, and prices, namely wages in this case. There are three key developments that I think help to explain the dynamics over the past few years. First, over that period, there's been a weakening in the growth of labour demand, reflecting the decline in mining investment and the still weak state of overall demand across the non-mining economy. Second, there's been a decline in the growth of labour supply, some of which reflects a cyclical discouraged worker effect, but the ageing of the population is also a significant and a very much enduring influence. And third, wages are adjusting to the degree of spare capacity in the labour market. Moreover, slower growth of wages is playing a part in the real exchange rate adjustment that's required as the terms of trade and mining investment decline. To a large extent, these developments reflect an unwinding of some of the adjustment that was seen over the period when commodity prices were rising and the mining investment boom was in the midst of its investment phase. As my colleagues and I have noted elsewhere, that period saw a significant appreciation of the nominal exchange rate and real exchange rates, alongside relatively strong growth in both employment and wages, particularly for mining and mining-related activities. So these changes are now working in reverse, with both the nominal exchange rate and the growth of wages lower than they had been. Both are helpful parts of the necessary adjustment process, and monetary policy is also playing its role by providing support to demand. Now, in large part, subdued growth of labour demand over the past couple of years, that's reflected below-trend growth in output over much of that period. The economy's been facing various headwinds over that time, including the decline in the terms of trade, the decline in mining investment, the high level of the exchange rate, and weak growth of public demand. The demand for labour can be thought of as being derived from the demand for the goods and services that it helps to produce. So it's not surprising that employment growth weakened and the unemployment rate turned up from around the middle of 2012. That corresponded to a noticeable slowing in the growth of economic activity, which remained relatively subdued at least up until late last year. In turn, much of that owes to the decline in mining investment, as you can see here. Meanwhile, growth of activity in the non-mining economy was subdued through that period, but it picked up slightly from late last year. That modest pickup may have contributed, at least in part, to improved employment growth over the past few months. It may also be that there's been some of that improvement in the labour market reflects something of a catching up of employment growth, if you like, after only very modest growth through 2013. Now, GDP growth lifted noticeably around the turn of this year, and it was running at a bit above trend over the year to the March quarter that we've just seen the data for. But much of that owed to a very strong contribution, as you can see here, from the production and export of resources, which doesn't draw on much labour. The strength of resource production of late partly reflects an improvement in labour productivity in the mining sector, and that's to be expected as new productive capacity comes online there. However, labour productivity growth, as you can see here, has improved over the past few years across a broader range of industries, following a period of quite weak growth. Now, if that can be sustained, it would be a very positive development, including for employees who in time will benefit through sustainable gains in their earnings. Over the past couple of years, what it's meant is that the growth in output that we have seen has been achieved with relatively moderate growth in employment. Outside of the mining sector, the general improvement in productivity growth may have been in response to a range of competitive pressures coming to bear during a period of weak growth of aggregate demand. And I think it's true to say that the still high level of the exchange rate is one such competitive pressure. The transition from the relatively labour-intensive phase of the mining boom to its capital-intensive production phase, that's apparent in employment growth across different industries. If we just step back for 1 minute to the period from 2008-09 to 2011-12, which is the period covered by this slide, that was, by the way, just prior to what appears to have been the peak in mining investment. So if we look at that period, resource-related activity accounted for a bit more than half of the growth in employment. Much of that was in the mining industry itself, down in the last bar there. But much was also in industries that provide inputs to resources extraction or investment. So things like business services, manufacturing and construction, they all benefited directly from this resource-related activity. But now, as we're starting to see the decline in mining investment, there's been a reversal of some of those trends. Most notably, business services employment, that's declined significantly, with firms which are more exposed to the mining sector particularly affected. Also, mining employment, that's plateaued, as you can see here, since about the middle of 2012. And meanwhile, there's been further strong growth in employment in household services, and that's accounted for a significant share of the growth in employment over recent years. There's also been a very slight upward trend in employment in construction. That's consistent with the prospect of strong pickup in both residential and non-residential building, which will require more workers in the period ahead. The relatively weak state of overall labour demand over the past couple of years, that's been evident in measures of employment intentions, of job vacancies and job advertisements. And some of these have shown improvement of late, but they remain at still at relatively low levels. So households' expectations, they've adjusted as well. Weak growth of labour demand has translated into their concerns about job security. And in turn, concerns over job security and labour market conditions have led to a decline in the rate of employee resignations, which in spite of an increase in the rate of dismissals, has seen turnover in the labour market decline a little. So, as I suggested earlier, labour market outcomes, they also depend on the supply of labour. And like labour demand, growth in labour supply, that slowed substantially over the past year or so, and that reflects both these cyclical as well as these more enduring structural influences. I apologise for this chart. It takes a little while to absorb, but I perhaps may spend time when I just make the key point. The slowing, which is that the slowing in the growth of the labour supply is evident in the rate of labour force participation, which has declined. You can see that's the light blue bar on the left there, which has fallen. A smaller proportion of the working age population is now employed or looking for work. That's what that means. And this decline in the participation rate has been larger than the average experienced during earlier periods of rising unemployment. So the light blue decline here is larger than the average light blue decline in previous episodes of rising unemployment. And what that means is it's, if we take the working age population, which is this bar, the labour force, which is shown by the dot here, that's just growing slightly less than it has in previous periods where unemployment has been rising. So even though the population has continued to grow at a strong rate, the growth in the labour force has been, as I said, a little slower than previous experience might have suggested. It's not unusual, of course, for the participation rate to fall during periods of weak demand. As jobs become more difficult to find, some individuals, they become discouraged from searching. And those individuals, they may still be available to work, but they might choose to sit out on the sidelines of the labour market, ready to take up an opportunity or at least begin searching for one when conditions improve. So discouraged individuals, they represent an element of labour market slack that's not captured by the conventional measure of unemployment because they're marginally attached to the labour force. In recent years, there's been a rise in the proportion of the working age population that is marginally attached to the labour force, and that's consistent with this discouraged worker effect that I was just mentioning. This has contributed to the decline in the participation rate, that is, a rise in the share of the working age population that are not in the labour force, shown here in the red line. But since about 2010, since about this time here on the chart, this increase in marginal attachment, that's only accounted for less than a quarter of the rise in the share of the working age population not in the labour force. So many of those not in the labour force, they may still have been discouraged, but they chose to make themselves unavailable for work. So, for example, they may have embarked on a period of study or decided to retire earlier than they might have otherwise have been the case. The noticeable increase in the number of people that are not in the labour force and are not considered to be marginally attached suggests that there are other sort of potentially more structural factors at play than just these cyclical ones. An important one, of course, is ageing. An increasing share of the populace is moving into these into older age brackets, and those tend to have lower rates of participation, as shown here. Also, older workers are more likely to work part-time, so even those participating do so with fewer hours on average than when they were in the prime of their working age lives. The ageing of the population, of course, is not a new phenomenon. By itself, ageing is estimated to have subtracted from the participation rate at between 0.1 and 0.2 percentage points per year over the past decade and a half, as suggested by the estimates shown here. However, the effect has picked up a little in recent years. This line has moved into more negative territory, and that's happened as baby boomers have begun to reach the age of 65 years. So that hasn't changed so much, but what has begun to deviate more noticeably from its historical path in recent years is the participation rate among older workers. In the past, the participation of those people in older age brackets worked to more than offset the effect of an increasing share of older people in the population. In other words, it more than offset this ageing effect. So while the workforce was ageing, more people were working later into life, as you can see here, than was the case in the past. And in particular, older women were more likely to participate than was the case for their predecessors. But in recent years, as you can see, that process, that trend has slowed, and their participation rates have been flat or even just falling a touch. What's not clear to me, though, is why that upward trend's tapered off. Of course, it could be a response to the cyclical weakness in the labour market that I've just talked about, in which case the participation rates of those aged 55 years and over might trend up again in time. These upward trends that we've seen earlier might reassert themselves. Alternatively, it may be that it's more structural, more enduring. Perhaps these earlier forces, including rising longevity and a general ability and preference of people to work later into life, perhaps those forces may have largely run their course. However, I think given the long history of longevity, of rising longevity, it seems likely that that itself is going to continue, at least for a time. One possibility, though, is that the forces that are underpinning that earlier rise in the participation at older ages, including longevity, may have run up against current incentives for many to retire by the age of 65. However, the story of lower participation rates is not entirely about just ageing and the behaviour of older workers. As you can see here, participation has also declined for other groups, most notably younger people, many more of whom are participating in education, as is suggested here. Again, those sorts of declines in participation may have both cyclical and some structural elements. We turn now to wages, which is sort of the other important part of this equation. While the growth of rates of labour demand and supply, they've both been weaker over the past couple of years, we know it's the former, it's labour demand, that has been the more significant slowing than the latter. How do we know that? Well, we know that because the fact is that labour supply has not been constraining employment growth, and that's evident in the rise in unemployment and the substantial decline in the growth of wages over that period, as you can see here. That slowing in wage growth, it's clear also in the leftward shift here in the distribution of wages across individual firms. The data shown here are from the NAB Business Survey, but that story is also consistent with the bank's own liaison program, which suggests that wage outcomes of more than 4% have become far less common than was the case just a few years ago. Indeed, outcomes of 2 to 3% are more common than 3 to 4%. And slower wage growth, that's also been helped by inflation expectations remaining well contained. The implications of a slowing in labour demand relative to supply depend significantly on the responsiveness of wages. So changes in demand, they're going to have less of an effect on employment and output if wages respond sooner and by more than otherwise. And in this respect, the more flexible labour market in comparison to earlier terms of trade booms has been very helpful. This flexibility allowed for a rise in relative wages, the relative wage, to encourage labour into resource and resource-related activities during that run-up in mining investment, without that leading to a large rise in the growth rate of wages just across the economy more broadly. That same flexibility is helping as the terms of trade and mining investment turn down. Indeed, as you can see here, the decline in wage growth of late has been particularly pronounced in mining and business services, although it's evident elsewhere. The move from the investment to the production phase of the mining boom, what that's doing is it's freeing up, and it's going to continue to free up labour to move back into the non-resource sectors of the economy. This has weighed on wage growth right across the economy, and it's likely to do so for a while yet. The slowing in wage growth across all industries has meant that firms have experienced relatively slow growth in their labour costs. And this is more striking after accounting for the growth in the productivity of labour, which, as I've already noted earlier, that's picked up somewhat compared to the pace we'd become accustomed to over much of the 2000s. Over the past year and a half, the growth in nominal wages has been matched by growth in labour productivity, and as a result, there's been no increase in the cost of labour required to produce a unit of output. In turn, slower growth in labour costs is having a beneficial effect on international competitiveness. The link between labour costs and competitiveness can be illustrated by a measure of the real exchange rate based on unit labour costs. That's shown as the real TWI here, based on nominal unit labour costs, the uppermost line in that top panel. That tells us about the labour cost of producing a unit of output in Australia relative to the cost of doing so in our trading partners when they're both measured in an equivalent currency term. So over the decade to 2011, as you can see here, the real exchange rate appreciated significantly. That was consistent with the rise in the terms of trade and the mining investment boom. Much of that occurred via the nominal exchange rate, as you can see here, the nominal TWY shown in red there. That appreciated by a little more than 50% over that same period. But part of the adjustment occurred also via a pickup in the pace of wage growth at a time when labour productivity growth was relatively slow. So as you can see in the lower panel here, nominal unit labour costs in Australia, they increased by around 25% relative to our trading partners over this same period, contributing noticeably to the decline in competitiveness. Of course, that's the decline in competitiveness outside of the resource sector, which was benefiting from the much higher commodity prices. Now that process is just beginning to change course. A decline in the real exchange rate is one of the important ways in which the economy can adjust to the decline in the terms of trade and the transition to the production phase of the mining boom. Over the past year, we've seen a noticeable decline in the nominal exchange rate, although it still remains high by historical standards, particularly given the further decline in commodity prices that we've seen in recent months. At the same time, Australian unit labour costs have stopped rising. You can see this line here, it stopped rising and perhaps even declined a little just since this period in mid-2012. This is part of the adjustment to the decline in commodity prices and will assist the non-mining economy regain some competitiveness and generate employment growth as demand for labour in the resources sector turns down. Adjustment via slower wage growth and stronger productivity growth, that may not contribute as much nor as quickly to a real depreciation as might be expected from a decline in the nominal exchange rate. However, it's still preferable to the alternative of little or no adjustment in the growth of unit labour costs, which would come at the expense of more unemployment and all of the associated economic and social costs. So just to conclude, growth in both labour demand and labour supply has been slow over recent years. Demand for labour has been affected by several headwinds. The downturn in mining investment, that's weighed on domestic demand, while a commensurate pickup in exports has been much less labour intensive. On the labour supply side, much of the slowdown is likely to have had had a cyclical element, although structural factors such as ageing, they're also playing a role. The slower growth of wages over the past couple of years, that's been a helpful part of the process of adjusting to the downturn in commodity prices and mining investment. The decline in wage growth has contributed, at least at the margins, to a turnaround in the real exchange rate and helped to cushion the effect of slower growth of domestic demand on employment growth. It's also helped to contain domestic cost pressures, thereby offsetting the effect of the lower exchange rate that we have seen on consumer prices. The demand for labour has improved over recent months, although, as I've suggested, some of that may reflect a catch-up after a period of weak employment growth last year. Some forward-looking indicators are higher than they have been, though they're still at levels consistent with only moderate employment growth in the next few months. The bank's latest forecast for employment growth to pick up gradually over the next 2 years. The unemployment rate is expected to remain elevated for a period, declining from later in 2015 when we anticipate GDP growth will be picking up to an above-trend pace. But if we look well beyond that horizon, demographic changes loom large and they'll play an increasing role in the discussion of labour market developments. And as we've suggested on a number of occasions, in time it's likely that the availability of workers rather than jobs, the availability of workers will be the main concern. And in that world, one imagines that real wages might grow a little more rapidly than otherwise in order to actually encourage participation. So let me stop there, James, and hand it over to you.
Thank you. I'm Stephen Walters, JP Morgan. Chris, thanks for your comments there. I'm just interested, a couple of months ago when the bank seemingly changed the tone of the comments around the labour market, and I think most would agree that the comments became slightly more upbeat. I'm just wondering what really drove the change. Was it the leading indicators evolving in a different way, or am I correct in saying that the bank changed its view a couple of months ago? And I remember you talking about perhaps unemployment continuing to rise, but I think you just repeated the phrase that it would stay pretty constant before declining next year. So I'm just interested in your views around that.
Yeah, so, I mean, as always with our forecasts, there's quite a lot of uncertainty around them. I think what was happening over the course of this year is more hard sort of data on actual labour market sort of outcomes, if you like, employment in particular, coming to light, as well as the drop in the unemployment rate. It's dropped a little bit since February this year. That perhaps wasn't so surprising. We saw, as I showed earlier, some improvement in... well, we've certainly seen an improvement in GDP, but more importantly, the sort of more labour-intensive non-mining activity just started to pick up across a range of indicators. And then subsequently, the labour market showed these signs of improvement. Employment growth has been relatively strong over the course of this year. But as I said, I think part of that is this reflects this improvement, but part of it may also be that just the growth in employment in heads terms that we'd seen right through 2013 was really surprisingly weak, given that demand growth wasn't that subdued. It was moderate, but it wasn't that subdued. So there may just be an element of catching up there. And then the thing to say here is that, yes, the forward-looking indicators have improved. Some of them have sort of improved more than others. But that's positive. But they remain at pretty low levels. So they're still consistent with only sort of moderate employment growth over the period ahead, and that's what our forecasts have, with the population growing still pretty strongly and therefore the labour force growing still pretty strongly. That means the unemployment rate should stay elevated for a time.
Labour market flexibility is a big public policy issue, and it has been for a long time and still seems to be. From what I've heard you saying, how the bank's written up things in recent times and the way that the labour market's reacting to economic news, it seems that the labour market already has a fair degree of flexibility. Softer growth, we've seen unemployment ratcheting up and the wages growth slowing. Do you think that the labour market flexibility is pretty good at the moment? And that's another benefit for our economy, that we've got a reasonably flexible labour market?
No, it's a good question. You know, I've done work trying to sort of measure that, and it's extremely hard to measure and very hard to compare to what's happening in other countries as well. I think the point that we've made about labour market flexibility is really a comparison to much earlier episodes. So this is a flexibility that's sort of developed over quite a period of time, really starting from something like the 1990s onwards. And it's not just any one particular policy, but quite the sort of the accretion of all of these. But what it meant was you could get a big increase in the demand for labour in the resource sector during the big expansionary phase in mining investment. And wages there could pick up. But they wouldn't automatically just translate into the same sort of wage increases right across the economy. And generally, people didn't then just lift their inflation expectations, their expectations of wages everywhere. There was some lifting of wage growth elsewhere, but it was pretty moderate in the scheme of previous expansions. And I think that what that did was, even though we've had a rise in our nominal unit labour costs relative to the rest of the world, presumably that's much less than what we might have got in much previous episodes, which didn't end so well.
Stephen on ABC Capital Markets. Chris, the chart you put up in the discussions about the improvement in productivity in recent years compared to the 2000s, part of that is likely to have been cyclical of late. But do you think we're bordering on being more than that now, that there is some structural improvement occurring, and would you expect that to continue?
The optimist in me would say yes, and the pessimist in me would say no. So I think you're right, it may well have a cyclical element. The point of this chart's a little hard to see in the lines, that's why we've put some numbers here for you. So the total economy growth's about 2% per annum over the latter part, the last few years shown there on average. Now some of that is definitely coming from mining, because if you exclude mining, it's not as much. But both are notably higher growth rates than that sort of period from the mid-2000s. So there may be a cyclical element to it. It's always hard to know. This data itself is subject to revision. And what really matters is whether this will be enduring. And I don't know. I think you can see the sorts of competitive pressures that are coming to bear, including for some time in the non-mining parts of the economy through the high exchange rate. That's the sort of thing that can lead firms particularly to try and do the things they need to do to get productivity up. Whether that's going to be sustainable, I don't know at this stage. I think we've got a few years here, though, so it's positive. but it's too early to say. What it does do in the chart, at least it suggests that the anomaly, if anything, was that sort of middle period. So it's an open question. I don't know yet, is the answer.
Justin, over ANZ. Your numbers on kind of resource-related employment, I presume they're from the RDP you guys did a while back. Over the last, I think in the mid-2000s, that research found about 250,000 jobs have been generated from just the resources investment part. Now, that's peaked some time ago. You're saying we're partway through that process now of job shedding. Have you had a stab at how far through that process we are, and in a forward-looking sense, how much we've got to go? Obviously, it's very difficult to gauge, but have you had a stab?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, as you said, so the mining part, the direct part, that last bar there, that looks from this other graph to have sort of peaked. It looks to have plateaued for a while. But more importantly, as you suggest, it's this related activity in other parts. And you can see perhaps the strongest suggestion of that in business services, which have fallen quite a bit. Our own liaison suggests that firms in that sector that are affected and directly connected to that mining-related investment activity, they think much of that sort of reasonably sharp pullback has sort of run its course. That's hard to know for sure, and it's going to vary a bit, I think, from one commodity to the next. But that's the sense overall that much of that's occurred. But we know there are workers, particularly on some of these big LNG projects, for example, and they use a lot more workers to build the thing, and they're still in the building phase than they need to run them when they're in their operational phase. So I think there's still more of that to come. So it's a little hard to know, but some more to come, maybe not quite as much as we've seen, but still some significant reductions perhaps. Depends, of course, on commodity prices. Right? So some are weaker than others at the moment, coal in particular, for example.
Follow-up question on the same chart. It seems that
One of the reasons perhaps that unemployment hasn't risen quite as fast as was expected, because we've seen a substantial pickup in employment in the non-mining construction sector. It's like, construction has responded appropriately to the signals from house prices in particular. That's about it more so perhaps than in previous episodes of house price strength. But we are seeing some signs, if you look at like RPI data suggesting house price inflation has started to moderate quite substantially in the last couple of months. Building approvals numbers suggest that building approvals might be starting to moderate again quite quickly. Does that present any concerns about whether the construction sector might not be able to absorb workers being shed from the mining construction side as readily perhaps as looked likely a couple of months ago?
It's a good question. So I think it's still an open question. We're definitely facing a period of reasonable strength in building activity in both residential and non-residential building sectors over the next year or so. We see that in the building approvals of both have been elevated for a while, and so the work that's yet to be done, the work in the pipeline, that's been building to reasonable levels. So there is a demand for labour there. Maybe we're seeing the early signs of some of that labour being employed in that sector to do that work. The thing about whether or not that's going to be sufficient and useful in terms of absorbing this labour being freed up from the mining investment-related activity, the mining construction, is whether or not those skills are transferable and whether those people are transferable. Our sense is that definitely in non-res construction, those skills, on average, many of those skills can be used in both, obviously not all. It's also true of much of the dwelling investment, because remember, a lot of it, the dwelling investments in the higher density space rather than the detached dwellings. So the detached dwellings is where we understand those skills aren't as transferable. But there is, thankfully, perhaps there is a sort of a lot more of those building approvals in the dwelling space has been in the high density. And then there's those non-res building approvals, which have been running at a pace which has led to a build-up in the work yet to be done. So that's the period in the next year. But I think it's still an open question as to whether or not the labour can move and whether that demand will sort of offset what's let go from the mining side of things.
Thank you, Chris, for your book. Along with similar lines, I guess there's a question about the weakness of wage growth. Whether you saw that the weakness was so pronounced in wages growth that it was going to undermine the strength of consumer spending. So it already seems that we had just a very brief burst of consumer spending. Wages growth and labour income has already come right back, and they just haven't seen a lot of momentum going into the second quarter of this year.
I mean, I think it's been true that, you know, wages growth has been moderate for some time now, and so that in itself has led to slower growth of household disposable income than otherwise, as well as sort of the, at least through 2013, the reasonably weak growth of employment. So on the one hand, wages growth doesn't look like it's done anything much different in the last little while from what it's been doing recently. So it's still pretty low. But employment for the first few months of this year at least has picked up. Well, that's going to boost household incomes. I think what our forecasts assume for consumption is that there will be some wealth effect, which will lead to a slight, and I say a slight decline in the savings ratio. So you can get consumption running a little bit faster than incomes if the saving ratio is dipping just a little bit. We've seen that savings rate dip for the better part of about 18 months. It's just been a slow trend down. Our forecasts have a little bit more of that. So that should help to keep consumption growth above income growth. You're right, retail sales, for example, have sort of softened a bit in recent months. But that comes after a very, very strong January, and it's often the pattern that we've been seeing. So I think it's still an open question as to sort of how that should proceed. But I think the main theme is, yeah, wages growth remaining low. We don't see it falling from here. The indicators don't suggest that, but neither does it look like it's going to pick up anytime quickly. There's been some improvement in the labour market in terms of employment. That's very welcome. That should help support consumption at the margins, as will this sort of wealth effect from house prices, equity prices as well.
Thanks, Chris. Justin Smirk from Westpac. Chris, I was intrigued by your comment that you'll see over time you expect to see a shortage of labour develop. Is that implication then that you actually are seeing a much more structural decline in the participation rate and you are expecting it to continue to decline in for the medium term?
Well, I think it's an open question, and that was the point of, see if I can find it, of this chart. We just don't know whether or not this earlier trend rise in, say, participation of older workers, whether the plateauing of that and even turning down just a little there for males is something that's occurred just because growth's been a bit slower than previously and you've got this discouraged worker effect weighing on that. Or whether there is, as I said, maybe things like rising longevity and so on have run up against the sort of current incentives that many people face to retire at a particular age. And so even though we'll be living a bit longer and in reasonably healthy form, maybe we still have this incentive to retire. So I think we don't know. What we do know, though, is that my main point is that the effect, direct effect of ageing on participation, that's sort of building a bit, and it's reasonably noticeable, and that's not going to sort of, these are slow moving things, but in time I just see that could be an important influence, that'll sort of weigh on participation. And so if that's the case and we have an ageing population in retirement, you know, the demand for labour, the weak demand for labour won't be so much the issue as sort of a weaker supply for labour. But it's rather speculative, I don't know. I wrote a paper on this back in 2006 suggesting this was the case, and it's just alluding to that possibility.
Just to your comment on the Aussie dollar and commodity prices, which you noted they were quite divergent at the moment. And when I look at the two on a chart, it almost looks like they're even more divergent, say,
compared to third quarter, fourth quarter last year, when you guys were quite vocal about the setting of evaluation of the currency. Are you now, I mean, you guys have said less about the currency so far this year, are you more accepting of that divergence in the sense that when you look around and you see the Bank of Japan continuing to expand its balance sheet and the ECB seemingly expressing a desire to do the same thing, these are sort of unusual conditions which could maybe tell you that that divergence will persist for a lot longer than you would like. Is that the reason why you guys have appeared, at least on the surface, to be a little bit more comfortable?
Oh, well, I wouldn't use a word to describe it like that. I would say, and we've said on numerous occasions, that we think it's high, and in part because, largely because of that further fall in commodity prices, as you said, since around February, the exchange rate's been moving up and commodity prices have been moving down in a noticeable fashion. And in February, I gave a speech shortly after we put the statement out talking about the exchange rate and how I think about it, at least. And the thing is, it can really diverge from these fundamental levels for quite a while. And it's really hard to know exactly why. And those fundamental levels depend most significantly, in a statistical sense at least, on things like the terms of trade and commodity prices. The interest rate differential has a bit of a role to play. But it's the commodity prices that are the real sort of statistically significant explanator over a long period of time. So we say it's high at the moment. I think that's a reflection of the fact that it's moved higher since February while commodity prices moved the other way. That's not a forecast, because the other thing about my speech is you can't forecast the nominal exchange rate. But the sort of models tell me that we shouldn't be surprised if the exchange rate was to fall further from here because of those commodity prices and what they're doing. When, I don't know. As you said, the exchange rate depends on a range of things, including what's happening offshore.